Families of the victims of the Bondi Beach terror attack are calling on the Prime Minister to establish a national royal commission, saying Australians are owed the truth. In an open letter, 17 Jewish families urged Anthony Albanese to immediately launch an inquiry into the rise of anti-Semitism and examine failures in the law enforcement, intelligence and policy before the attack. 15 people were killed when two ISIS-inspired gunmen allegedly opened fire during Hanukkah celebrations on the 14th of December. The families say warning signs were ignored and they want answers on how extremist hatred was allowed to grow and what changes are needed to protect Australians. Sydneysiders are being warned to expect heavily armed police on New Year's Eve as New South Wales Premier signals a strong security response following the Bondi terror attack. 2 weeks after the anti-Semitic attack that killed 15 people, Premier Chris Minns urged residents to keep supporting local businesses and celebrate as planned. Speaking in Bondi, he said heightened security was necessary, while warning against letting fear dictate daily life. Mr. Minns says the aim of terrorism is to disrupt ordinary life and encourage people to go out, spend time with family and friends, and as he put it, thumb your nose at the terrorists.
Because of the weird ideology of some of these terrorists, what they want is for us to crawl up into a ball and not have fun with our family and friends during this Christmas period. So I'm calling on the people of Sydney to step out, to do what you would ordinarily do, to thumb your nose at the terrorists, to thumb your nose at some of the ideology that we've seen online and on social media, and ensure that you say loud and clear that we will not be cowed by these terrorists.
Australians seeking to expose wrongdoing face a complex legal landscape, but a new 2025 precedent has clarified key whistleblower protections. Under the ruling, whistleblowers may use information obtained through legal discovery, where parties exchange confidential documents for a trial, to make a public interest disclosure. Such disclosures are protected under whistleblowing laws, shielding individuals from defamation claims, breaches of non-disclosure agreements, reprisals, or criminal prosecution. The precedent was set after intervention by the Human Rights Law Centre in the case of an ABC whistleblower, with the court finding that whistleblower immunities extend to confidential court documents used to expose wrongdoing. A new rooftop experiment in Western Sydney is offering a glimpse of how cities could use plants in combination with solar power to transform energy production and support nature. Australia is already a world leader in rooftop solar with more than 4.2 million systems installed on homes and businesses nationwide. But scientists believe a trial in Bradfield, Australia's newest city being constructed around Western Sydney International Airport, could further boost efficiency and environmental benefits. Dr. Peter Erger, an environmental engineer from the University of Technology Sydney, says 14,000 plants native to the surrounding Cumberland Plain are being used on rooftops to help cool over 300 solar panels.
We've got some really interesting results, specifically around the cooling potential of plants on a building, and we've now extended that to cooling the solar panels. By cooling the solar panels, they become more efficient. I have a vision that every single building should have some form of plants on or in it. If we're not building cities that have green infrastructure and green roofs integrated in them, we're really letting our future generations down.
A man has been charged after allegedly displaying hate symbol tattoos at Newcastle Beach in New South Wales on Christmas Eve. The 26-year-old was later arrested at a home south of Coffs Harbour about 6:30 p.m. on Saturday. He was subsequently charged with offences relating to the knowing public display of a Nazi symbol. The man has been granted bail to appear at Newcastle local court on January the 22nd. A man has handed himself into police after a double fatal stabbing in Sydney's northwest early on Sunday morning. Emergency services were called to a home in Quakers Hill following reports of a disturbance, and police found a man suffering stab wounds on the footpath. A woman aged in her 30s was found deceased in the home. The man was taken to Liverpool Hospital in a critical condition, but later died. The 47-year-old man was arrested after he attended Blacktown Police Station, and detectives are investigating the circumstances of the deaths. A man has been arrested after a Boxing Day stabbing in a remote Aboriginal community that left one man dead. A 35-year-old man suffered serious chest injuries after being stabbed at a residence in the community of Larambah in central Australia, 200 kilometres northwest of Alice Springs. Northern Territory Police says he died a short time later at the local medical clinic. Police were called in from surrounding centres, including Tea Tree, Yundamu and Alice Springs. And a 39-year-old man was later arrested in Yundamu, 140 kilometres west of the stabbing incident. The Northern Territory Police Force is investigating a death in custody that occurred in a watch house in Tennant Creek on Saturday afternoon. A 44-year-old female prisoner was found unconscious in her cell around 1 p.m. and was transferred to hospital, where she died shortly afterwards. A crime scene has been established and the incident is being treated as a death in custody, with the cause of death yet to be determined. A 20-year-old man has been charged after a Labor Party incident in Western Australia was left in critical condition following an alleged assault in Perth's nightclub district. 36-year-old Tim Picton was found unconscious after police were called to a disturbance outside a licensed premises in Northbridge around 5:30 on Saturday morning. He was taken to Royal Perth Hospital with life-threatening injuries. A 20-year-old has been charged with one count of grievous bodily harm. Assistant Police Commissioner Martin Hames says police are yet to determine what led to the alleged assault.
It's not clear at this time. The actions of the people involved are still subject to investigation. It's understood that they don't know each other. We're still interviewing a number of witnesses and the matter is still subject to investigation.
Forecasters say wet conditions in northern Queensland are likely to continue over the next few days. Hundreds of millimetres of rain has already fallen in parts of the state's northwest and tropical northeast. The Weather Bureau says the rainfall could peak today or tomorrow. Meteorologist Shane Kennedy says a major flood warning is in place for the Flinders River, and there could be major flash flooding on the northeast coast.
Expecting daily rainfall totals typically in the 60 to 200 millimetre range, but there is that potential to see some isolated falls of 200 to 300 millimetres plus. That's particularly in the northwest and around the northeast coast between around Port Douglas down to Townsville, and that does include Cairns.
And now in sport, in sailing, Master Lock Comanche has claimed line honours, first to cross the finish line in the 80th Sydney to Hobart yacht race. It was a speedy finish, with the yacht travelling down Hobart's Derwent River at a speed of 11.8 knots. It's the fifth time Comanche has taken line honours. Last year, the Super Maxi's crew retired from the race because of a broken mainsail. And now for today in the weather, Perth is sunny at 22, Darwin is partly cloudy at 31, Brisbane is mostly sunny at 25, Sydney is mostly sunny at 22, Canberra is sunny at 23, Melbourne is sunny at 30, and Hobart is partly cloudy at 22, and Adelaide is sunny at 34. That wraps up the latest in news, sport and weather. You're listening to NITV Radio.
I've read online that football has always been in your family. Can you tell me about your connection to the game?
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly that in my life. Since the day I was born, my father played All of my siblings played. My grandparents actually opened up the first football club in Mount Morgan, which is where my parents grew up. So, yeah, it's quite literally been in my family since, well, when I was born, but also well before I was born.
As a First Nations person, do you think this early entry to football is unique? Do you believe the game's enmeshed in Indigenous communities compared to other sports?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that a lot of sports actually do it a lot better than football does. But I think for, you know, people that have actually grown up with it, then I think there's no looking back. For me personally, I don't think I could ever play another sport as seriously as I ever did soccer. So I'm very grateful in that sense. But yeah, I do think that a lot of other sports in our country do it far better than what we do in soccer.
You made your A-League debut at 19 years old and your career has taken you both overseas and across the country. What have been some career highlights for you?
Well, that's a really big question. I think going to play in Portugal for a little while was a really fun experience, but I don't know. I think experiencing a Matildas camp was always, you know, something I wanted, and being in that environment was such a cool experience for me. But honestly, I think just playing, I was so lucky to be able to do it. And I think, you know, the sacrifices that my parents made and also my siblings, for me to even have that chance is so special. So I think, you know, I just think playing was great. Also winning silverware is also fantastic as well. But, yeah, I don't know, I think just, you know, playing and doing my family proud and myself proud and my culture proud is probably something that I'll always take away from my career.
Mm. You mentioned that football is quite a global sport. It brings people together from all around the world. But what do you think it means to Australians?
What it means to Australians, yeah, that's. I think they love it. I think, you know, having the Women's World Cup, you know, recently, I think that really ignited the nation and showed what great sport football actually is and what it does for people. And, you know, people always talk about women's sport in general is not great and, you know, all the normal stuff. But I think, you know, being able to showcase women's sport but also football in general at the highest level in the country really showed how much we do love it, and I think that's so cool.
Cathy Freeman was an idol for you growing up, but do you think that elite level representation in sport has grown and evolved over the past 25 years?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's grown a lot. I know when I was growing up and realised that I wanted to play professionally, there wasn't really anyone on TV that looked like me. Obviously, Cathy Freeman icon was a role model for me, but I think just more generally there wasn't anyone that looked like me. So I think that the access that we have now, and obviously who we see on television, has grown so much, especially on the field, off the field. It really has taken a turn, and I think we're so lucky that, you know, we can watch television or sports and 9 out of 10 times we'll see someone that looks like us doing what kids probably don't think they can do, but representation is everything. And I think the more that happens and the more exposure there is, the better that'll be for everyone.
You are now the John Moriarty Football Scholarships Coordinator and a Program Ambassador. What's that been like?
Yeah, it's been really cool. I know that I got into working for the foundation through Jada Wyman when we were teammates at Sydney. I'm always so grateful that was something that she, you know, brought into my life. And I recently just did a trip to Cairns to spend some time with our team that delivers on the ground there. And that was such a special week for me, and seeing all of the really beautiful communities and kids that we get to deal with on a daily basis is a really great reminder of the impact and the reach that we do have in all of our hubs. And yeah, it's a really special company to work for, and I'm grateful that I get to speak so highly of it and actually believe in the work that we do.
How do you find working with John Moriarty?
Yeah, I met him. He is such a sweet man. He is so sweet and special, and he is just so passionate about the foundation and obviously soccer, and he's always asking about, oh, when can we watch and all of this other sort of stuff. So, yeah, he's a really special man to work for, and I think that, you know, what he's created and grown from his own experiences is nonetheless more inspiring than I think anyone that I've ever had to work for. So, yeah, he is a very sweet, endearing man, and I'm grateful that I get to, you know, call him a friend and also someone I work for.
Mm. JMF is now in 19 communities across 3 different states. Why is it important to engage young people, particularly in those remote and regional communities?
Yeah, I think we talk about it a lot, but the access I think that remote communities have is far less than what we see here in our time here. So I think it's so important, and with our recent Deloitte's report that's been released, I think it was indicated that 95% of the educators indicate that the students actually attend the schools 1 to 2 more days than they usually would before we were in that school. So I think that that's incredible. We show ways to get kids to school but also keep them there, and that's obviously a really big problem, not problem, but it's a big hurdle, I think, in remote communities, that, you know, getting kids to school and keeping them there and keeping them off the street. So I think having our programs there is so important, because we do provide those impacts and those pathways for kids to be able to attend school and to stay there.
You've mentioned there that the foundation is about more than just football. So what kind of support does the program provide to do things like keep young people engaged in school?
We closing the gap targets, we actually do make a genuine difference there. I think that 74% of our staff are actually local Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander members from the community. We also have 46% of our coaching staff are female, and 60% of our program participants are female. So I think we're just without the school side of it, we are making genuine impact across many of those closing the gap targets, which is a problem in our community. So I think the fact that we have that pathway into communities and we are closing the gaps quite literally, I think that speaks more important than just what we do on the field for football. We also have 46% of our coaching staff are female, and 60% of our program participants are female. So I think we're just without the school side of it, we are making genuine impact across many of those closing the gap targets, which is a problem in our community. So I think the fact that we have that pathway into communities and we are closing the gaps quite literally, I think that speaks more important than just what we do on the field for football.
JMF is just one company. Do you believe more generally needs to be done to improve pathways for Indigenous footballers?
Yeah, I think always. I think pathways can always be improved. I think opportunities can always be better. And it is all about having conversations and having the awareness that, you know, programs like ours do actually have an impact and create long-lasting change within communities and lives in the spaces that we work. So, yeah, I think it's very important.
I'm here with Alicia Fagan, a.k.a. Wadi Bagaruk, proud Wadawurrung woman, and she is an Aboriginal artist, small business owner, and all-round deadly creative. Thanks for jumping on.
Hey! So I'll give you a little introduction then about who I am and my mob and where I come from. So my name's Alicia, and in my language we say Nuwa Wadim, Narik Alicia Wadawurrung Bagaruk, which means, hi, my name's Alicia, and I'm a Wadawurrung woman. So Wadi Bagaruk, that name came to me coming from a saltwater mob, growing up on the water, and just feeling being on the ocean, I felt like all of the surround noise is gone. I felt in my element. I felt closest to my ancestors while being on the waters. I noticed that myself am in my element when I'm on the water. Wari in Wadawurrung language means ocean, and Bagaruk means woman. Those two words put together resonate and basically identify me and who I am. So I'm an Indigenous artist. I've been a practicing artist since I was a little boop-boop. My grandfather, he is a renowned, famous Indigenous artist, and he taught me my practice since I was a baby. My grandfather would always be painting, since I used to sit around him, and it wasn't until I was old enough to pick up a paintbrush that I was able to join in with him. But just constantly watching his practice, he had the canvas on the floor. I remember he would have all these paints around him, and he would just be lining and dotting away. And as soon as I, like I said, was able to pick up a paintbrush, I started practicing art. I practiced art for and learned a lot from my grandfather. He's my role model and my inspiration. He taught me everything I know today about my culture, my peoples, and he's a such a knowledgeable elder, and he's my inspiration. Since starting it, I've also been able to conduct and learn a lot about my weaving practice and sharing that a lot with mob and allies. So not only am I an artist, I also am a master weaver. I love doing the blanket stitch and the quillamon stitch. I also have a beautiful Auntie Tammy. So Auntie Tammy Gilson, she is a master weaver, and she has travelled all over Australia sharing her woven practice. And she's done exhibits at the Karoo Heritage Trust. She's just amazing and the best to yarn up with. And she taught me a lot of my practice. And not only her, but Auntie Nola Louch and Sister Carla Louch, they helped me learn with my weaving practice to be able to really blossom and just grow. So I have, since starting my artistry career, I have been able to have a multitude amount of opportunities, from being able to paint the boots from the Indigenous round for the Geelong football players, Jack Martin and George Stevens. I've been able to paint the footy boots for the women's AFL as well, so Katie Darbs and Zali Freswell. That has been amazing opportunities. Currently about to be conducting a mural for the Western Bulldogs home ground, which I'm so excited for. Recently worked on a massive artwork that took me months for Reece Plumbing, and they're putting that in their wrap and soon to release a video just talking about the artwork and the connection it has. So my story has been a unique one for me, and my and how I came about as well. So from a young age, like I said, I was really connected with culture and my identity. It wasn't until I was a rebellious young teenager that I found myself just probably not on the right track, and fell into a little bit of a disconnect from culture. And I noticed that as I was disconnected from culture, I had gotten myself in a little bit of trouble. I'd fallen into bad patterns, and I just was really lost. But it wasn't until I was able to reconnect with my roots and being able to sit down with myself and really, really remember who I am, my identity and my culture, that I was able to blossom again. So I think I've got massive inspirations when I look at, like, our beautiful Archie Roach and Jack Charles, looking at their stories, and like, although they've been through some struggles, like the stuff that they were able to amount to within their lives is just, it's just so inspiring. And it helps me think, like, I myself am not perfect, and although I've had my time, although I had a period of my life where I was very disconnected, I always found my roots and I found my way back to culture and who I am. So me, I believe that every Indigenous person has a gift, whether that gift be blood healing or weaving or storytelling or artistry. I believe that you can find that gift, whether it be early in life or later in life, but when you find your gift, you know it's your gift. And my gift I have, that I found, is weaving and artistry. I'm able to share my story and share my culture through art and my stories through weaving. I have a website. I have an Instagram at worrybugrook, which is my Instagram handle. If you want to support me, give me a follow. I do commission pieces. I'm also happy to just even have a yarn, or if anyone wants to learn a bit about my mob and culture, I'm happy for the conversation. I'm just an open book, so it's good anytime I feel anyone wants to give me a message or even just have a yarn, I'm there. I love supporting mob, so like I said, I've had my rough yards, and I have been through quite a bit myself in life, I just really want to empower and uplift and support Mob and make Mob know that although stuff might not be as you want it right now, it's not the live all end all. Like, you really can rewrite your story. Even though stuff might be hard right now, it's going to get better. And I just really like to use my example of the stuff I've been through and talk about how far I've come now as an acting artist and motivate people that you can do it too, whether it not be through art, but through storytelling or anything. You can really just blossom.
With your business, Worried by Guruk, what are the things that you do? Because I know you do painting and weaving and workshops. What are the services that you provide?
Yeah, so since diving into my business, it really just started on weaving workshops. So I conduct weaving workshops for like private events, whether it be corporate, but just to give that inclusion and that knowledge of like culture and keep it alive. So working with Mob and allies to be able to join in a practice that's really significant and just be able to learn something that's very sacred and I'm all for being able to keep that culture alive and give that cultural awareness and being able to have those with a respectful heart come alongside and be able to involve themselves in these workshops. It's just a beautiful experience itself. I also have been doing titter skirts, the grass skirts workshop. So I did one recently with Jira and that was amazing because you have aunties that are off country and you have some people that are currently living, as I'm currently living in Nam, that are really far away from country and don't really get the opportunity to sit in around a circle and conduct women's business. But Jira gave us a safe place to be able to go back to our roots and do women's business together. And I learned so much from the aunties. Like, although I was facilitating the grass skirts workshop and we're all making grass skirts together, some of these aunties and their grass skirts they made, I felt like I wasn't even the teacher. they were so deadly. Like, some of the skirts we made, it was amazing. And I love doing it because there's so many opportunities now with getting into ceremony and being able to get involved in dance, especially up in Camp Sovereignty. I love that we were able to be able to sit and practice that and make the skirts. And it was great because some of the women also can now go home and make the skirts for their burais and be able to make them for their nieces and just all be able to practice culture. And I love that. So It was a really amazing experience. I also do a lot of public speaking engagements. So there's been times where I've done lots of speaking to culture and speaking to my story at different events. Like a few weeks ago, I spoke at a human rights symposium through Deakin Uni and just really spoke about the freedom of artist expression within human rights and what that looks like. So I know that sometimes I struggle with being able to share, I guess, really what I want to share through my art, because it could be labelled as too political or it could be labelled as, you know, whatever he say. But I think I, as an artist, should feel free to be able to practice and do whatever art I feel needed. And at the time, like, I feel like there's a lot of issues and stuff in the world right now, and to raise awareness around them is just something I'm passionate about. Like, I'm not going to stay quiet when it comes to it. I'm pretty loud and proud.
When it comes to getting in contact with you, either to work with you or to follow along in your journey, where can people go and how does it look to work with Worried by Guruk?
Right now, I guess my main point of contact would be either through my website or through my Instagram. Worried by Guruk is a bit hard on the tongue or maybe hard to spell, so I could probably spell that out. It's WARRIBAGURRK. So that's Worried by Guruk, and that's how it's spelled in Wadawurrung language, meaning ocean woman. And that's my Instagram handle. That's my website, if you just add a .com to the end of that. And I'm feel free to reach out. Even if it's just on Instagram, you could send me a private message, and I'll be happy to work with anyone and everyone. I also have an email, which is worriedbyguruk. @gmail.com. If you wanted to reach out to my email, I'm happy to work with anyone that comes with a pure heart and intentions to want to learn about culture and want to be able to get involved. I think I've been able to share, and I just want to keep sharing till the day I die.
So this year, 2025, has been huge for Wari Bagaruk as you've transitioned from just working as yourself to making it this business. What do you hope to see for 2026?
Yeah, so I've had a lot of support with becoming and actually becoming a freelance acting artist. I had support from Many Rivers, and I had some support from Nara Millie, all free for Mob. If you want to get an ABN, or if you want to get some business support or make your idea come to life, they even help with marketing, and it's just, they're really deadly. I'd give a little shout out to them. But what I want to see for 2026, I guess, is, not that I could probably do this in 2026, but I'd love to. But my future goal is not only to be working for myself as a sole trader, but I want to expand and really fill some gaps that I see in community that are needing to be met. And a lot of that comes down to, I guess, support with housing, or even even whether it be making a safe space for people to come and having a community centre where people can be able to practice art or practice weaving and have just this all supports on deck, whether it be emergency relief and stuff like that. I think that there's so much that I would love to see Wari Bagaruk come, but just being able to get there is something I'm working on. I've established myself enough now to where I have been able to secure enough money to hopefully start this dream out, but it's gonna be a long way coming. But I just love to see, whether it be from 5 years or 10 years from now, having my own space. So right now I'm doing most of my stuff from home or traveling out to organizations to conduct weaving workshops, but I'd really just love to have my own space. So whether that be like a shop front, or whether that be like a little place where not only I can do weaving workshops and have people come along, but also have Mob just give Mob that safe place. Even if Mob are struggling, or even if you just want to get out of the house, and I want to be able to provide that sanctuary and that safe haven. Like, people can just walk in whenever they want and be able to either, you know, sit down and do some art and just get away from the world. I would love to branch out to where I'm supporting Mob more and more and giving back to community. Yeah, see, I started Wari Bagaruk always in the intention that it wasn't, I guess, it never was for myself. I sometimes have like business meetings with my business advisor, and they talk about competition in the industry. It's a real white law. They say, mm-hmm. they say, oh, let's look at your competitors. I say, they're not my competitors. They're my mob. They're my people. They're shining. They're doing deadly stuff. So when they talk, I think every business person has a tick box that they need to ask. So when they ask, oh, let's look at your competitors in the market. We're talking about my competitors. I don't have competitors. I've got people alongside me that are sharing culture, that are out there being able to bring awareness around it and doing some deadly stuff. And I love uplifting Mob, and I love seeing Mob kicking goals. Like, I've had a few of my close friends who have struggled a lot with being able to make ABNs or even get their business up and rolling, and I'm all for them. Like, I'll be posting them every day on my social media. I'll be giving them shout outs, giving them opportunities that I once didn't have, just so that I can see Mob shining and Mob really just out there sharing culture and keeping it alive and well. The Torch Project. So the Torch Project are a not-for-profit organisation who work with Mob from incarceration and post-release, and being able to give them the opportunity to sell their artworks and have that stepping ground to get out in community and really just have that financial stability to rewrite their story. And they have helped me so much within my journey that I feel the need to be able to give a shout out to them. I also wanted to give a shout out to my grandfather, Albert Fagan, and a shout out to Reese Paint and Yarn. So Reese Paint and Yarn was one of my cousins who really supported me and seen my dream and helped me really make that come to life. I want to give a shout out to my little daughter too, Alira, my Bura. She's my everything, my purpose and my drive. And every day I wake up and I see her and I just think, you know, like I really want to be able to give this girl the whole world and be able to see her blossom and bloom in culture. And I love her so much.
I want to thank you for coming on and talking with us today, Alicia.
No, thank you.
That was Alicia Fagan, a.k.a. Wadi Bagaruk, Aboriginal artist, small business owner, based down in Naarm, Melbourne. I'm Nari Pakai. You're listening to NITV Radio.